If you enjoy the FitCast and you can help support us going forward, please go to thefitcast.com and click on one of the donation tabs on the website. Via PayPal, you can do a one-time donation or set up a recurring donation to help support the show. The show does take a considerable amount of time to produce, and obviously there's also costs with running the website and getting the episodes to you via iTunes or onto your favorite device for listening to them. If you can, if you're in the position to do so, go to thefitcast.com, click on one of those donation tabs, and please make a donation. Thank you. Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 297. I am Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have back on the show as we lead up to episode 300, Mike Boyle. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I wanted to be on for episode 300, though. Wow.
Dan John, huh? He pulled me over at a Perform Better seminar like 6 months ago. This was, or maybe it was even last summer, saying that he wanted to have episode 300, and he would do whatever it takes, so he gets it.
God bless him. What a great guy.
Yeah, he's great. So
and a great guest.
Absolutely. But, you know, as we kind of lead towards 300, like, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show is, you know, we are talking about some of our favorite guests in the past. And leading up to this, you know, my mentors, obviously you and, you know, we had Eric on a little bit earlier, you know, just talking about kind of how things have really evolved. And it is crazy, like, you know, being at MBSC for coming up on 5 years now, to think that that would happen is pretty crazy. But we also have some awesome stuff to talk about on things that are coming up at MBSC as well.
Yeah, the good thing is there's lots of good stuff happening. So that's a huge positive for us.
Well, let's get in some questions from the audience. This is a mixture of a couple questions that I tried to put into one, but we got a lot of questions about, you know, who are your influences when it comes to making changes to the program? Because I think one of the persons that was asking this question, you know, is on Body by Bo Online, and, you know, we have lots of guest speakers come in and things like that, and sometimes we make changes to the program. So that, I guess they wanted to know, you know, who are the people that you go to when it comes to, you know, possibly making changes to the program? Who are the people that you're listening to?
You know, it's funny. I think there are less and less now because I think there's less and less big changes that we make to the program. I think if you looked at the last person to have a substantial influence, obviously, was Ron Roscoe, who's the PRI founder, and I guess really Michael Mullen was the guy who kind of came in and got us thinking a little bit about the whole PRI concept. But the real reality is that didn't change significantly what we do. So when we look at it, I think Stuart McGill, Greg Cook, there's guys like that. But I think now as our program gets more and more fine-tuned, there's less and less changes. If I think about what are we doing different this summer from last summer, I think most of the changes are coming from our own experience and looking at things and saying, okay, maybe we want to try doing some complex work with the athletes to try to get a better handle on what they could do in season. I think it's very particular now to our own situation and less influenced by what somebody was doing. I think early on, obviously, the Don Chews and the Vern Gambettas and the Albert Meals influenced me really strongly. And then I think there was a point in time when Mark Verstegen and the people from Athletes Performance had a big influence on me. And then there was sort of, I always talk about, it's like different periods in history or geology or whatever. You kind of go through a period where you're very influenced by track coaches, very influenced by strength coaches. I think the last period we've been very influenced by physical therapists. And now I think we look at it and think probably we are more the influencers. So we're almost in many ways influencing ourselves with our own experiments and saying, okay, how did this work? Did this end up being the way that we wanted it to be? Even some things that I saw today that we did, I'm thinking, I don't think I like that. I think we did some standing T stuff and it wasn't great. So I think that's a big part of how we progress.
We got a question from Ashley asking or wanting to know how you go about determining regressions and progressions for squatting and deadlift exercises. How does that system all work?
I think it's the same thing that we just talked about. I think a lot of it is experience and looking and saying, okay, what would we consider? Because I think in most ways, how do you do it? It's sort of, I always say, it's anatomy and physics. You look at stuff and you say, okay, how can I change the physics of this to make it more favorable? How can I give them, if I want to regress it, a lower percentage of their body weight? So I think that's really what you're doing, is a lot of times you're using your intuition, you're using your common sense, you're using your knowledge of exercises to say, okay, this is the way that we should regress this. And then the thing that I think we do is better than anybody else is there's the trial and error part, because we do have so many athletes training that we then put that thought into motion to see, okay, does that work? Because I think we've looked at, if you look at how the programs have progressed, holds and eccentrics and all of these things that we're doing, trying to just get better quality of movement out of our beginner athletes. And then looking at that and saying, okay, yeah, this gives us good quality movement. Let's just say it's 80-20. This gives us good quality movement in 80% of the kids. And then what's the regression for 20? And then how do we progress that? So I don't think there's any kind of hard and fast rules like do this. Mm-hmm. I think it's much more intuitive and thoughtful and empirical, where you're looking at it and saying, okay, for instance, we might have started, I think, with rear foot elevated split squat, and then we realized, okay, wow, kids aren't really getting that. All right, let's go bottoms up rear foot elevated split squat. And we looked at that and said, okay, that's definitely better, but the kids are dropping down too fast. And then all of a sudden we're thinking, all right, how about we go bottoms up rear foot elevated split squat with eccentric emphasis? And suddenly you're like, yeah, that one worked, because we got that sort of 80-20 mix that we wanted. I think in some ways, everybody's never going to get everything. But you look at it and think, yes, this particular exercise allowed the highest percentage of kids to learn effectively. I think that's really what you're looking for.
Well, let's change gears for a second. And we got a question from Scott asking, you know, you always, whether it's like coming on the FitCast or we do a lot of calls for Body Bible Online and NBSC Thrive, like people always are asking you the question, you know, what are you reading now? And I swear, like every Perform Better seminar I go to, you get that question too. You know, how do you read, you know, so many books and things like that? But I guess Scott wanted to know, like, what's the book that's had the most impact on you, not necessarily in terms of strength and conditioning, but impact on you in general in the past year, and why?
Well, I think if you say in the past year, it's different versus what's had the most impact on you in general. I really like The Slight Edge, mm-hmm. which I think Jeff Olson was the author of that. And because I think what they do now, much like what we talked about with programming, is they reinforce where we are. They reinforce that thought process of, okay, we're doing the right things here. And Slight Edge is sort of all about literally the slight edge, the little things that you do, that 5% difference that you're making all of the time to make yourself better, to make your athletes better, to make the program better. And so, and it's funny, one of the biggest influences is in a book, it's Craig Ballantyne's journals, those gratitude journals. I think if you look, it's more the writing that I'm doing in that gratitude journal that's having a bigger effect than what I'm reading right now. Because what I find is in the gratitude journal, one of the things that's in it, and maybe you could post a link to whatever, I forget the people's name that we got it from, but Bianca and the company name. But when I write, I sort of write the same things every day about, okay, I need to be better at the end of the day. I need to be patient with my kids. I need to be more focused on you know, on the gym. I need to be more focused when I'm coaching. I need to not get distracted. So I think the writing and journaling on it, and maybe for me it's not a daily basis. I'd probably say I get into that thing 4 times a week and sit down and actually record my thoughts for that day. But I would say that's had a larger effect on me than anything else that I've done in the last year. So it, gratitude journal, and you can post a link for it.
Yeah, that's Craig Ballantyne's Early to Rise that he's working with right now.
There we go.
He was on a couple episodes back talking about that, so definitely I recommend checking that out. So another question that we got from people, I think this person is specifically going to the Long Beach seminar in, I guess, 3 weeks now. And they wanted to know specifically, like, in so far, I mean, we've had Providence and we've had Chicago. Are there any talks or any lectures or hands-on that have really stood out to you that you've seen or that, you know, you've been hearing people talk about that people should make sure they check out?
That's a really good question. Let me think about that one for a second. Who did I mean? And I don't know if Emily, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, Splishel. I might be butchering that one, was talking Sunday. I don't know if she's in Long Beach. People said that was good, and they said the last time they saw her that she was very good. I always liked Charlie's lecture, Charlie Weingroff's. I enjoyed it when he did it. I think that was pretty thought-provoking. That's on Body by Boyle online.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to Stuart McGill, but I think Stuart McGill, as much as I like him, I think sometimes the information is getting a little bit repetitive if you've heard him. So I think part of the problem, too, with some of these guys that have been there multiple times is whether or not you've heard them. I don't know if McGill or Myers actually are in Long Beach. I don't have a Long Beach schedule in front of me. I really liked Rob Dos Remedios' talk at the One Day. I liked Bill Knowles' talk at the One Day and at our NBSC winter seminar. So, Dos I know will be there. I'm not sure if Bill is in Long Beach because I don't have a Long Beach schedule in front of me. Nick Winkelmann's coaching talk, and I don't know if Nick was doing it. People were texting me from Nick's talk saying, you should be in here right now, and I was setting up my hands-on, so I wasn't able to get up there and go. But I'm not sure if Nick is at Long Beach either. That's the bad part about not being in front of a computer right now. I'm not exactly sure.
Well, I can confirm Nick is going to be there. Nick Winkelmann is going to be in Long Beach, and obviously Dos will be. He's like right in that backyard as well as Charlie. And the only thing I don't think is going to be. Actually, I think pretty much everyone you mentioned is going to be there. So.
Yeah. So those would be the big ones, and I wanted to hear Greg Rose's because Greg, I think, was really good. He was on Sunday, and I didn't stay for Sunday at either one. So he's always a great guy to listen to. I think he's just a really good thinker. So, but there's so many, that's what makes it good.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, even out in Chicago, I finally got to sit into a couple talks. So it was a little bit less crazy than out in Providence. And of course, you know, Sue Falsoni is always great. You know, every time she does stuff, it's always thought-provoking and interesting stuff. And, I thought specifically, like, one of the things that we're trying to do with, like, the certified functional strength coach that we'll talk in a while about, you know, not being certified in a tool and, like, getting locked into, like, a kettlebell or a TRX or something like that was a good talk for the audience to perform better.
Yeah, I think it was. I liked hers too. Same thing. I always like Sue. I could listen to Sue.
Exactly.
All day.
So going forward, let's get back to some more questions from the audience. Ren had a question. What are the best strength work or drills for improving lateral field movement, speed, and power? What are your favorites?
You know, it's funny. I still think the sagittal stuff, I think, works best because I do, even though we're talking about lateral, I think that everybody should be slide boarding if you're looking at lateral field and court sports. And so I think for us, we've tried to do it just this simple lateral lunge, but the idea of progression and regression, starting everybody at lateral squat so they can get the proper range of motion, then progressing that person into lateral lunge, getting them into loaded lateral lunge. I think that's an exercise that we underutilize a lot, that we're trying to utilize a little bit more in our programming. But I think there's so much stuff that we're doing just in our ladder progressions and in our warm-ups, teaching people crossover and cross behind skip so that they understand the different ways that your legs work. The fact that when you're trying to cross over that there's an adduction leg and there's an abduction leg. I think a lot of people don't get that. It's something if you look at, people will really struggle with the idea of, we talk about a cross under skip. So I think there's a lot of stuff that's there that's going to help in those types of sports, slide board, crossovers, crossover drills that we're doing in the ladder, crossover drills that we're doing outside of the ladder, lateral squat to lateral lunge. I guess that would probably be the big ones that I would look at and think those are ones that really would make a major difference for sports where you're doing a lot of lateral movement.
Terrell has kind of a follow-up question. Would love to hear your take on your favorite linear speed drills for people with no equipment.
I mean, linear speed drills, people with no equipment, I think if you're talking about speed versus strength, I don't think you can beat the old Gambetta progression, lean, fall, run, ball drop, those types of things. And if you look, I still think two of the best speed DVDs that anybody ever done or has done were Vern's and I think it was called Developing Linear Speed, and then the old Speed Dynamics series. There was a one called Drills for Speed that Kevin O'Donnell and Lawrence Seagraves did, and just falling starts, quadruped sort of starts, you know, ground starts, things where you're on your face, things where you've got one leg up. I don't think there's anything better for that, but I will say that if you're trying to get faster with no equipment, you're probably going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, it comes down to strength. It comes down to force production. I think if you need to get a sled, you've got to have a sled to push in. More than anything, you need to be doing lower body strength training. You have to improve your ability to put force into the ground. There is nothing more important than speed. I think people waste a huge amount of time doing speed drills without increasing force production. We were talking about this yesterday with our NHL group, our pro hockey group, and our Olympic girl group. We're monitoring their vertical jump every week. One, to get a handle on overtraining. So if we think they're, obviously not if we think they're overtraining, if we see their vertical jumps dropping, we're going to know that we're overtraining. But I was talking to one of our other coaches the other day, Mike Vaughn, and I said, it's amazing how coaches don't get it in terms of, if you were to look and say, okay, all this strength training that I do, whatever I do, all this training, never mind strength training, speed drills, ladder drills, everything that I do, if the vertical jump does not increase and the 10-yard dash does not decrease, then effectively you wasted your time. Because what you're trying to do is improve force production. And so I think you've got to look at really simple numbers and then ask yourself, am I making a change? Am I shifting those simple numbers? Obviously, there's some situations. You may have a kid who gains weight and doesn't get faster. That kid's more powerful. But if we just take all things being equal, the person's body mass does not change significantly during the course of that off-season cycle. If you're not seeing an increase in vertical jump and you're not seeing a decrease in 10-yard dash times, and if you're not monitoring one of those two or both of those two, then you're not doing your job. I might be you guys and think, okay, this is really what it is. If they're not getting faster and they're not getting more powerful, what's the point of lifting weights? Mm-hmm. Maybe you could talk, Dan John talks about the whole armor building idea, and I think there's something to that. There's going to be a resistance to injury that's going to be built in by getting stronger, by getting bigger. But ultimately, you should be able to do that and increase that power output at the same time.
At NT Strength on Twitter wanted to know, for ACL post-surgery, what is the return strategy at MBSC for people that are coming back post-ACL surgery? I guess, what's our rehab strategy for weight training and for linear and lateral movement and all that stuff?
And it's funny, it's a great opportunity to plug. I did a DVD, and really it's just a recorded lecture called "There's ACL Prevention, Just Good Training." And really it's the same thing as ACL. It goes back to Charlie's, you know, Vern Gambetta said it first, Charlie said it later, in that all of these, good training is good rehab. So it's no more different than following the same progressions and looking and, okay, can this person split squat? Okay, in split squat, they're going to do riff and elevated split squat. Can they do a bridge? Can they do a slide board leg curl? Can they do those things? Because ACL rehab is nothing more than good training and following your plyo progressions, following your movement progressions, following your strength progressions. We outlined all that kind of in the lecture, which became that DVD. But it really is that simple, where you can look at it and think, okay, what do I have to do? All right. Particularly when you pass that 16-week mark. 16-week is kind of the magic number in the ACL world, where now this person, the graft is solid, they should be able to do the things that they need to do. So when we're looking at that, we've got to be able to say, okay, from week 16 on, we're simply going to follow our progressions. The biggest thing with ACL rehab, in all honesty, is that people don't get is the does it hurt thing. So I would look at it and think, there's an article on strengthcoach.com that Jonas Boschman write, which is nothing more than following our progressions about ACL rehab, because ACL rehab is running and jumping and lifting. And you've got to be able, it can't be an either or kind of situation. You've got to be able to do all of those things as you go through that process of rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. So I think what I would do if I was him is I'd buy that, go on performbetter.com and buy that lecture. It will be, if you're dealing with somebody, if you've got someone that you like and care about who's torn their ACL, then you can more than your money's worth for whatever it is, the $35 or $39 that can cost.
Going off that, you know, just in terms of educational stuff, we had a question from Neil asking about the talk that we recently put up on Body by Bull Online about, you know, the psychological side of training. We had someone in come in and talk about, you know, sports psychology and things like that. I guess they were just wondering what were your take home points from that talk?
That was Peter Athens. I think the big take home point for that for me was I felt like we were doing a pretty good job.
Yeah.
In terms of what we're doing. I think the other take home point from that type of lecture is to realize what initially happened a lot in sports psychology is that you had maybe people with more of a psychology background and less of a sport background. And I think that gave a lot of us in the sports world, probably made us not fans of sports psychology. Because I always felt sometimes you'd have these people that you would deal with in the sports psych world. And I felt like sometimes they were enablers. And they were, you know, oh, well, if you're not, well, you can go talk to so-and-so and they'll tell you everything's going to be okay. And now I think what you see in the sports psychology world now is more of kind of a tough love sort of thing where people are being much more honest. I've alluded to, I don't know if I said, I think I might have when I was talking to Peter. We had a woman named Colleen Hacker who worked with our women's Olympic ice hockey team, and she was a sports psychologist, but she was awesome. One of the things I can remember that stuck in my head from her talk was she looked at a lot of the girls and said, hey, you got to spend more time in the mirror room, girls. You got to spend more time looking at yourself and really take an inventory, because a lot of these kids, unfortunately for us now with athletes, most of these from a sports psychology standpoint, grown up around a group of enablers, parents, family, everything's been all about, you know, my kid getting a scholarship. And as a result, the kid that you get very often as your teammate is sometimes not a real good teammate because they've been, you know, they're always on multiple teams and they're on tournament teams and they're on all these things that they're doing that are very me-centric as opposed to we-centric. And so I think a big part when we start looking at this whole idea of sports psychology is realizing that, hey, you know, a big part of sports psychology is developing these skills to be a teammate, to be a good teammate, to be able to be part of a group and to not be making team sports into individual sports. Because I think that's a big part of what happens in a negative way when we start looking at sports is that we get these athletes who've now taken sporting situations that should be very much team-oriented. And it's not because, if this team isn't good, my mom and dad will just put me on another team. Or they'll make up my own team for me. They'll buy a team. They'll start a team. And this is sort of the reality of the sports world that we live in. And I think Peter and a lot of the people now that are involved in sports, like some of the more modern people, realize that and see that it's not as much about sort of visualization and breathing and all of these things as it is about getting these kids to live in more of the we world and in less of the me world.
And just as we wrap up, I know we're running out of time. Obviously, we alluded to it earlier in the show, but we've been working on something for almost the last 2 years now that we're really excited to start talking about. We were at Perform Better in Providence and in Chicago talking about it. There's been a lot of great feedback and lots of enthusiasm about that. But that's, you know, talking about a certification.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have our own certification, obviously. I'm speaking to the audience, not to you, because you know it. You're doing a lot of the work, but it's certified functional strength coach. And what we've really tried to do, which I think is going to be unique, at least in the mainstream fitness industry, is that we're going to have a certification where somebody is going to have to demonstrate that they actually can perform the things that they were tested on. So we'll have both a written test, which somebody will have to pass. The written test will then gain you entry to a one-day practical. And at the end of that one-day practical, you'll have we're not exactly sure. It's probably a 20, 30, or 40-minute test period where you will be asked to demonstrate exercises. You may be asked to do some movement drills. You may be asked to do some ladder drills. I think we'll probably have somewhere around 30 or 40 things in this base curriculum from a video standpoint that we'll expect everybody to be able to do. Because what we want, or what I want, and I guess it is what you want, what Kevin Carr wants, and what Brendan Rierick wants, and what Bob Hansen wants, is we want to be able to see people who are certified who you could put on the floor and think, those people can coach for me. And in all honesty, I think in very many cases, we don't have that right now. I think sometimes you look at somebody and you go to a seminar and you realize, wow, this person can't skip. There's a lot of things these people can't do. And hopefully we'll be able to begin the process of changing that. I think it's going to be a really positive thing. As you said, people are really, really excited. We've gotten great feedback. So,
absolutely. Yeah. If you guys are interested, just go to certifiedfsc.com and you can get us there on Twitter, certifiedfsc. And then on Facebook, just search for Certified Functional Strength Coach. We'll have more information up on there, but we're going to be getting started in September, and there's been some great feedback so far. And you know what I will say, if you can't get into the first couple, be patient, because we're going to be doing a lot of them. This is our really big, you know, main project for the next, you know, couple of years. So if you're patient, trust me, we're going to be coming to you, to a location near you. And also we'll be doing a bunch of them out of Boston. So Mike, I know you got to run, but thank you so much for coming on. And I can't wait to talk to you later down the road.
All right. Thanks, Kev. I appreciate it.